It's time for Talk with Torque. Welcome to Rees on Racing with Frank Rees and Steady Eddie. We talk drags, IndyCar, vintage racing, and everything in between. If it's fast, we'll talk about it. Join the show now by emailing us at bstn@live.com or send us a tweet at bstn. Here are your hosts, Frank Rees and Steady Eddie.
This is Rees on Racing. Welcome back, everybody. It's our pleasure. We have a really cool guest. I say cool because he drives a funny car, so I guess that makes you cool automatically. He is part of Beal Racing and also AutoAnything.com. We'll get into that. He is Brandon Welsh. Brandon, how you doing, bud?
Frank, great to be here. Doing great.
You are going to be literally in our neck of the woods this weekend out at Norwalk, and we'll talk a little bit about that too, but my question to you right out of the box is, have you become an adept driver on the Nitro class?
You know what? That is a work in progress. You know, we had my first two races were last year in the pro ranks in Vegas and Pomona, very last two races of the season. And then we worked really hard. We got a new deal put together for Model Anything, a new sponsorship, and we basically completely overhauled the race car. So it's been Norwalk, Ohio, in a week will be my first real driving experience since last November. So I'm hoping I'm not too rusty.
Well, but have you done testing in 2016?
Yeah, we did. We did one short test session as part of an exhibition event out here in San Diego, where I live and where our shop is, and that was a lot of fun to put on a show for the hometown fans. But it's an 8-mile track, and it's a really short shutdown, so I got to be on the gas for about 200 feet. It's not quite the same as going 300 miles an hour out the back end.
So, you know, for you coming into Norwalk, you really have no data. You know, a lot of the other teams obviously have been there a couple times. So do you use the runs on, I don't know if it's Thursday, but definitely Friday leading up to Saturday, mm-hmm. trying to get into the event?
Yeah, it's a little bit about the funny car class this year, and really in the last full 12 months, we're going a massive shift in how these funny cars are run. It's a real renaissance with this class. I think it's the most exciting class in all of motorsports because you've got records nearly every weekend in front of sellout crowds and great TV package. And I think a lot of that's attributed to the laid-back headers in these funny cars, and these teams are just getting more and more performance out of these motors. So we are a little bit behind the eight ball, but basically we upgraded to everything they have without the laid-back headers because those things will drive the driver to where they're pointed. So I want to get a few more rounds under my belt before we bolt those on the car. But, yeah, we're going to start off with a really, really wide approach as far as we're going to take the adjusted altitude, the humidity, and the track conditions, and try to get the dart as close to the bullseye as possible. But we know we're going to be narrowing it down as the weekend goes on. So those two runs on Friday, two qualifying sessions are going to be checkout passes, and we'll see how we do, and then try to get closer as the weekend goes on. You know, we'd really like to get around that 4 seconds flat number. I don't think we got a 380 like some of these big show teams are able to pull out of the box nearly every weekend. But the goal is to sneak up on that number as the year goes by.
You know, when they shortened the length of the quarter mile a couple years ago, has that enabled crew chiefs then just to really go balls out? Because in the past, at least from my perspective and everybody else's, it always seemed like they were holding the car together just to make it to a quarter mile. Now, since they don't have to go a quarter mile, can they even get more aggressive with the tune-up?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. I've worked on one of these cars for 15 years, and the drivers we've had in the past have told me that last 300 feet, you just kind of duck down in the seat and hope the thing doesn't grenade. So with 1,000-foot runs out, those crew chiefs can lean on it as hard as they possibly can. And you don't get up against the really high RPMs like they used to. Because once these cars get past about half track, the RPMs just start to run away. And you get up close to 9,000 RPM and the thing does not want to stay together. So the shorter the racetrack, we don't have that issue as much. And I think a lot of it too is these crew chiefs are really, really smart, and they'll take whatever rule they're given, and they'll find a way to run faster than before, and that's what's happened.
Brandon Welsh is our guest. He is the driver of the AutoAnything.com Nitro Funny Car. He'll be at Norwalk. Your deal with them, is it for 8 races in a row, or do you have to miss a couple in between?
No, they basically gave us carte blanche to pick 8 races this year, so... We chose 8 races toward the back half of the season, which allowed us to take our time and get this race car set up right. And then we're going to do these next couple races in a row. So we'll be in Norwalk and then Chicago thereafter. We'll skip Denver because it's a completely different set of parts, different tune-up for that high of an altitude. And we'll go into Sonoma and Seattle and then hit Indy because who doesn't want to run the big go?
Big go, yep.
And then finish out in St. Louis, Dallas, and Pomona. And my friends over at NHRA, they told me that the Rookie of the Year field this year is relatively light in the Nitro ranks. So we're running 5 races. So we're running at least 5 races, which makes us eligible for that award. And we left Vegas off the schedule specifically so that if we need to pad my stats toward the end of the season, we can add another race and see if we can't make a run at that award.
So Vegas will be decided upon, what, maybe a couple of races into your rookie campaign?
Yeah, we'll see how the car is running. And my opinion is I'm always lobbying for more races, as much track time as we can get. So I'm sure we're leaning toward that, but we got to make sure that the guys are up for it. And, you know, if we burn up a bunch of money, blow up a couple motors, that plan may change. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I'm not really big on talking about wrecks or accidents, but I am curious your experience with your first Nitro fire. How did that go?
Yeah, that's something that every funny car driver's got to go through. It's kind of a rite of passage. I did not expect it to happen my 4th lap down the track in an NHRA event.
Yeah, who does?
But growing up, I'd see these things. I think that's what makes the funny car drivers the coolest guys on the property, in my opinion, because these guys, there is no contingency plan. If you choose to leg it out, you're also choosing to sit in that fireball, you know, for better or worse. So I had a morbid curiosity as far as how that felt. And, you know, we had a run, our 4th qualifying run in Vegas last year, and the car dropped a cylinder at the hit. And when it drops a cylinder right at the hit of the throttle, you can't really feel it. And it was just pulling me toward the center line. It dropped a cylinder on the left side, and I was in the right lane. It was just pulling me over to the left, but I'm trying to keep it. I got the steering wheel cranked to the right, and the car sounded okay. It felt okay, and I'm just trying to get this thing to the finish line because I think we were 17th at that point on the qualifying ladder. And all of a sudden, I hear a tat-tat, and then boom, and it shocked me. And the most shocking part about being on fire is that it's really a mesmerizing visual sight. You know, it's like you're transported into the middle of the bonfire and you've got the orange waves all over. But the part that's hardest to deal with is breathing the air. You know, our helmets are plumbed with fresh air and that helps a little bit, but I could feel every breath I took, my trachea searing, and that was motivation enough to get that car stopped and get the heck out of there. So I survived it. It was kind of an interesting experience. It wouldn't deter me from getting back in a funny car, obviously, but it's just part of the job.
Well, for those who haven't experienced driving at that speed on fire, explain a little bit, because are you trying to bail out of the roof hatch? Are you hitting bottles to put out the fire? I mean, is this all happening in nanoseconds?
Yeah, it feels like a long time, but we had video of the run, and from the moment it lit up to the moment I popped out of the roof hatch, it was only 7 seconds. I got to tell you, it felt like a minute and a half. But what happens right when that fireball hits me, I'm immediately looking, okay, I need to get the fire bottles deployed. So we have a lever on the front of the brake handle. Now the wheel well or the foot well in a Nitro Funny Car, there's only room for a clutch pedal and a gas pedal. So we got a hand brake. So there's a lever that sticks off the front of the brake handle, and you grab that lever, and that activates the fire bottles. And then immediately look to get the parachutes out. So that's another lever right above my head. So smack that lever as fast as I can. And then with my left hand, knock the fuel shutoff off because I don't want that fuel pump pumping more fuel into that fire. And then get back on the brake. So it's a lot of flapping the levers and pulling the levers to get this thing stopped, and then lean as hard as I can on the brake, and then I think it was still rolling a little bit by the time I popped out of the roof hatch, but I had had enough at that point.
Are you at least cognizant of the fact that you know what lane you're in, and you might have to maybe take the car and at least find the guardrail or the wall so you at least know where you're at and not hit maybe the guy next to you?
Yeah, the fireball, it only lasted half a second, but in that half a second, at that point in the run, I was about at the eighth mile, and the car's going 250 to 265 miles an hour at that point. And you're covering a couple football fields a second. So I was really concerned about not running into anything. That hurts a lot more than being on fire, so I hear. And so it's definitely figure out where the heck you are in the process. And I think the car was pulling me toward the center line, and right when that fireball lit off and I couldn't see it, I think I clipped a cone on the center line. But absolutely, the vision, and you never forget that you're actually still traveling 250 miles an hour, and you could very well hit something. So that was definitely on the top of my mind.
Brandon Welsh, the driver of AutoAnything.com. Funny Car is our guest. He'll be at Norwalk this weekend, also making five or six more races for the 2016 season. You know, when you talk about driving and the Funny Car has such a small, window to look out of, how much are you able to look out left or right depending on what lane you're in? Or do you even bother, have enough time to look left or right?
Yeah. I'm so concerned about, I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'8", and I'm so concerned about seeing over that injector hat. Yeah, it's a little bit of a disconcerting feeling when you're sitting in the race car and you can't really look perfectly straight ahead down to the end of the racetrack. And in fact, the view gets a lot better about 100 foot off the starting line when the tires start to grow and it picks the seat up a little bit. But as far as out the sides, you could cover the side windows and it really wouldn't matter. Really all you can see is the flames when it gets dark enough. You can see the flames out the side of the car. And depending on the body, that we have a spare body that we haven't rotated in yet that's a Dodge, that the windshield goes way out over the top of the injector, the air intake. And that it's like driving looking down a toilet paper roll. That's not my favorite body to be driving. So I prefer, we have a little bit older Monte Carlo. I prefer that. And then some of the newer Toyotas and the latest model Dodges are a little bit easier to see out of because the drivers finally said, all right, that's enough. We'd like to see as much as we possibly can driving one of these things.
Well, Brandon, who hasn't looked through a toilet paper roll and realized, boy, there's not much visual here, is there? No field
that's
of vision.
Right.
You know, when you come out of the fire, and I don't want to focus on this all day, but I want to try to paint a picture for people. After the car gets back to the pits and you're able to assess damage, how much damage was there?
Thankfully, it was because it dropped a cylinder and essentially the explosion was caused because when a cylinder stops firing, basically you're pumping fuel into the motor, the spark plug cannot ignite that fuel, so raw fuel is going out the exhaust. The combustion cycle of the motor is not perfectly efficient. So a little bit of fuel gets left back into that motor, and then the blower crams more fuel into there, and it just builds up until the pressure inside that cylinder is too much, and it either blows the top of the cylinder head out or it breaks the connecting rod. And fortunately for us, it broke a connecting rod down in the bottom of the motor. And what that does is it puts the hole through the side of the motor. It breaks everything rotating in the engine. But, these motors and the rotating assembly is one thing. If it also had blown upward, then it would have taken out a very expensive intake manifold, a blower, an expensive injector hat, probably would have hurt the body. So if I'm given the choice for the explosion to happen due to a broken connecting rod or due to a backfire of the supercharger, I'd much rather have the explosion go downward. So the damage was bad. It probably was a $20,000-$30,000 experience, but it could have been worse.
I'm always amazed with Top Fuel funny cars, and I think they're the greatest violent sport in the world, because every word is violent. You broke the crank, you grenaded the motor, you put a hole in the side. I mean, there's nothing subtle at all about a nitro funny car, is there?
No, and you know what's amazing is this. I had seen broken connecting rods many times in the past, and usually they break in half across the width of the connecting rod. But this, in fact, broke in half lengthwise all the way down the rod, straight down the middle. And the amount of force to go through, let's call it 4 inches of billet aluminum straight down the middle, is just, it blows my mind away. And then when that happens, you know, all those, it's like throwing a wrench in a spinning gear, because all of a sudden it seizes every other rod in the motor, and it broke 5 out of the 8 connecting rods. We have 5 holes in that block. It was basically a 300-pound paperweight at that point.
Yeah, it'd make a hell of a coffee table, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Before you go, I want to get your take a little bit about night qualifying. It always seems like it's drivers love it, drivers hate it, fans all love it. I remember years ago at Norwalk, Tom McEwen was actually doing a pass in his 57 Chevy funny car body, and literally when he took off, a transformer blew not too far down the road, and the whole track went black. So he took off, and there was an outage of lights, and they interviewed him, and he said he shut it off immediately, but he thought he blacked out. He was literally thought he blacked out. You couldn't even see the car. All you could do was hear it. So you haven't gone through that yet, and I was there, and I loved it. But what is your take on nighttime qualifying?
I love it. I grew up a fan of this sport, and thinking the funny car drivers were the coolest guys on the property. So yeah, the fact that it's really scary enough, you've got to override a decision-making point in your brain that says, this is unnatural. You're not supposed to go this fast. And that's during the daytime. So now imagine barreling down essentially a black hole, because no matter how well-lit a racetrack is, it's not well-lit enough. And it's not daytime. So that extra amount of guts that it takes to keep your foot down on the accelerator and drive it out the back end, it just it makes me happy. You know, you're alive at that point.
Yeah, I don't know if people would say guts. They'd probably say nuts. But, hey, either one, it rhymes, right?
That's right.
He is Brandon Welsh, the driver of AutoAnything.com. You can check him out. Fox has a new deal. They started this year where they're airing all the races. Some of them, I'm not even sure if they're all live at the end on Sundays, but you can check them out and make sure when you go to the race, you see Brandon and you say, hey, man, all the best. Love having you on. Great job. Let's do it again when you get a couple races under your belt in the 2016 season. And all the best for Rookie of the Year, too.
Frank, thanks a lot. Love being here.
All right, bud. See you later. That is Brandon Welsh, the driver of AutoAnything.com, Chuck Beal's Nitro Funny Car.